Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answer your questions. I am your host, Dr. Onit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and still practices on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts, hear stories from the emergency department, and listen to people who have struggled from addiction. Friends, fentanyl is plaguing America. It has infected all illicit drugs, from cocaine to meth, counterfeit pills, and even marijuana. If you're around someone who may be using drugs, you should carry naloxone, the opioid reversal agent. Carrying naloxone for drugs is like carrying an EpiPen for allergies. If you need a prescription for naloxone, you should have one. No questions asked. That is why I am offering a free prescription to anyone who needs one. Come visit me on hightruths.com to learn more about the show, submit a question, or download a free prescription for naloxone. And if you like the show, do me a favor. Give us a 5-star review and subscribe. Your stars are very much appreciated and go a long way in supporting the program. Today's episode is sponsored by Families Against Fentanyl. FAF is an organization set on breaking the status quo of failed solutions and to get to the core of the supply chain of deadly fentanyl. Learn more about FAF by visiting familiesagainstfentanyl.org and sign their petition to declare illegal fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. Hello again, High Truth listeners. Get ready for a deterring conversation. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev. Deterring, that is a critical action when we want to prevent a certain behavior. As a mother, I need deterrence for parenting. For example, I may not want my kids to ride a bike without a helmet. If that is the rule that I expect to be kept, I must have deterrence. Deterrence implies two things. One, I must have the means to enforce the rule, and I do as a mom. And two, I have to follow through with appropriate punishment or consequences if that rule is broken. For the first offense, for example, no bike for 2 weeks. Deterrence for crime works the same way. Do we want a society that allows a free drug trade with no deterrence? No consequences for drug dealing means more deaths and addiction. I refuse to accept the status quo of 300 deaths a day for fentanyl. We need strong deterrence to the fentanyl drug trade. Of course, I care about people who have a substance use disorder. I'm an emergency and addiction doctor. Taking care of such people is what I do for a living, and I love that. But because I see the damage that substance use has, I'm even more driven to prevent it. We will not naloxone or buprenorphine our way out of the fentanyl carnage. We need deterrence. And with that, let's hear our question of the day.
A drug toxicity death occurs nearly every 7 minutes in America. Drug dealers are selling counterfeit pills pressed to mimic legitimate pharmaceutical medications such as Xanax, Percocet, oxycodone, amongst others. Instead, they contain nothing but useless filler and illicit fentanyl. This despicable act by cartels and drug dealers is killing our children and loved ones. It clearly meets the standard of second-degree murder, which is acting with reckless disregard for human life. Many other states refer to this as drug-induced homicide. My daughter Alexandra is one of many victims of such a homicide. Alexandra was seeking relief from depression, not a death sentence. I have a message to parents out there. If you cannot guarantee your kid will not try one drug one time, you cannot guarantee that they won't be a victim of fentanyl. I encourage people to visit our website, druginducedhomicide.org. We have consumer protections for many products from false advertisement and toxic additives. We need consumer protection that prevents drug dealers from becoming death dealers. That's why we support legislation similar to drunk driving that warns drug dealers and prevents them from causing death. I thank Senator Umberg for supporting this legislation. My question for Senator Umberg is, why is there disproportionate protections for drug dealers over unsuspecting victims and those suffering from substance use disorder? Couldn't more deaths be prevented by holding drug dealers accountable?
Thank you, Matt, for your question and your tireless advocacy. I know Alexandra's memory is a blessing to you and your family, and through your efforts, we will save countless other children for suffering the same poisoning death homicide from fentanyl. To answer your question, we have California State Senator Thomas Umberg. Senator Umberg is chair of the Senate's Judiciary Committee. He's a retired U.S. Army colonel, former federal criminal prosecutor, four-term state legislator, small business owner, and was a deputy drug czar for President Clinton. To learn more about Senator Umberg, his legislation, and victims of drug-induced homicide, check out the High Truth show notes. Senator Umberg, welcome to High Truths.
Thank you, Dr. Lev. I appreciate it.
Well, tell us, you've had a very interesting career. What led you to want to be a senator?
I have had many careers, that's true. I like public service. I had served in the legislature starting in 1990, served two terms, 1990 to 94, then came back again in the mid-2000s, and then back again. On two occasions, voters thought that I should return to the practice of law rather than being in the legislature, so I took some breaks. And I enjoy the legislature. We have some challenges before us, but I enjoy representing people. I enjoy being their voice in Sacramento.
That's great. Well, I thank you for your service in the military and in the legislature. And we have something in common. We both worked at the same office, I think, at the White House. You were the deputy drug czar under President Bill Clinton, ONDCP, our alumni.
Right. What years were you there?
I was there on the previous administration. I was the chief medical officer.
And who was the director while you were there?
Jim Carroll.
Jim Carroll. Okay. Wow. Wow. So I'm wondering, I don't know if there was some crossover folks, but I'm sure there were.
I'm sure there were. There's some people who were there for 20 years. So that, yeah, that was fun. It's a great place. And what an opportunity, too, to be able to serve. But you learn a lot by being in that office. You have a really wide lens to the drug problem, supply, demand, potential solutions. You know, since you've been there, things have changed. We didn't have fentanyl in those days. But what have you learned from your experience at ONDCP and at the White House and your work on drugs that you're applying today to the fentanyl crisis?
So you're right. Things change quickly in the world of illicit drugs, and fentanyl is something different than we've ever seen before. It's far different than heroin. It's different than other opioids. It's a synthetic opioid. And what I learned when I was at ONDCP, and I've learned in other venues since, is that when you're dealing with substance abuse or you're dealing with something like fentanyl, it requires an all-in approach. Every tool, especially education, especially prevention, especially treatment, but also a law enforcement component, the supply reduction component. And one of the challenges is that people deal with it in sort of an either or fashion. It's really a false choice between, for example, making sure you enforce the law and also providing treatment and prevention. All those things are required. This is something that is devastating our country, particularly young people.
Yes, it is the public health crisis of our time, not COVID, it's fentanyl. But what can you as a California senator do about fentanyl?
Well, there's lots that we can do and lots that we should do. What I'm personally doing is that I am trying to both lead and develop a comprehensive response to it, including education, including prevention, including treatment. I'm carrying three pieces of legislation that deal directly with certain aspects. You know, one piece of legislation that provides for individuals, if they're suffering an overdose, it's from any opioid, but in particular fentanyl, or they're witnessing someone experiencing an overdose, they can call law enforcement and report that the person is experiencing an overdose. They can report the name of the individual who supplied whatever it was, whatever the drug was that caused the overdose. And that can't be used against them. And the reason we do that is we want people, if people are experiencing an overdose or they're witnessing someone experience an overdose, you want them to be able to call law enforcement without fear of a prosecution to save their own life or to save the life of someone else. That's number one. Number two is that in particular, fentanyl, but other drugs as well, are being distributed online, that folks are using platforms, some very obvious platforms, to distribute drugs. And what we've done is we have a bill in the legislature that says that if you're doing that, law enforcement or even an individual can notify the platform. So you can notify the platform that whatever social media platform is carrying that individual that's distributing drugs and say, you need to take that down. If they don't take it down, they can be held in contempt of the court and fined and punished if they don't take it down. And then thirdly, the particular measure that I think you referenced earlier is a measure that's patterned along the lines of what we do with folks who have been convicted of driving under the influence. If you're convicted of driving under the influence, the judge will tell you that driving while drunk or driving while under the influence of another substance is very, very, very dangerous. And if you do it again, you kill someone, now that you know how dangerous it is, now that you've experienced it, you could be charged with even a homicide. And that's what SB 44 does, is it simply says, look, if you've distributed fentanyl and you've now acknowledged it, or at least the court has informed you in no uncertain terms that you've distributed fentanyl, you've been convicted. And if you do it again and you kill someone, then you may be charged with something up to including a homicide.
That's called a Watson advisory for alcohol, right? So it was really, you've taken existing law that people agree with for alcohol and drunk driving and applied it to fentanyl.
That's, Dr. Lev, that is exactly correct.
Yeah. So we have a question from Matt Capaluto, who you know. His daughter, sadly, was killed, poisoned, murdered by fentanyl. She didn't mean to take that. And his question is, why is there disproportionate protection for drug dealers over unsuspecting victims like his daughter and those with substance disorder?
Well, first of all, Matt and his wife have been true champions in this effort. They've taken this horrible pain. As you mentioned, their daughter, Alexandra, was killed because she thought she was purchasing something else and it was laced with fentanyl and that killed her. And he and his wife have lent their daughter's name to this effort, Alexandra's Law. I'm not the right person to ask that question. Yes, there are other members of the legislature who seem to be concerned that this somehow would unfairly punish people. I obviously don't agree with that. But yes, there are some, you know, that one of the challenges, and Dr. Lev, since you were at the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy, you're probably aware of this, is that the term war on drugs has not been helpful.
I was just going to say that.
It has not been helpful because it creates a false image that somehow that at one point in time that we thought we could address this issue with simply law enforcement. And that's not correct. And it's not an either or circumstance, but a lot of folks think it's binary choice. Either you're going to, you know, arrest people or you're going to provide them treatment. And that's not so at all. And it's sad that that has become conventional wisdom of some folks.
Yeah, you're right. Well, we call it, people say, okay, we don't have a war on drugs anymore. That's a problem. We used to have a war on drugs, so there was a focus. Now we say we don't like the word war on drugs, but that does not mean we allow free drug trade. Right. It still means, right.
It means that we have to do it all. It means that there's a law enforcement component. We can't allow, whether it's on the street or whether it's the cartels that are manufacturing, in this case, fentanyl, bringing the country. We can't simply say, oh, OK, you know, we're just going to let that go. We can't do that.
Right. And if we do, then we have more deaths on our hand. And that's Matt's second question to you is, couldn't more deaths be prevented by holding drug dealers accountable?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think Alexandra's Law is a preventative measure. It's preventative because it provides even an individual who has distributed fentanyl, in essence, a second chance. And gives them a heads up. If you do this again, you may get charged with a crime up to including homicide. And that should prevent you from distributing drugs one more time. It should prevent you from, whether knowingly or unknowingly, distributing something that's laced with fentanyl. Fentanyl is such a different animal than any other drug we've ever dealt with in terms of drug control policy. And it, back to your point, it requires a dramatic response now.
So deterrence, you need deterrence if you don't want a certain behavior. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to have the same activity.
No, that's right. And I think that most effective deterrence is deterrence that happens fairly and quickly. And if we don't enforce the law, you know, for example, if someone, one of the arguments against SB 44 is that folks who are users, who are addicted, also sell fentanyl in order to support their habit. And while that might be true, then we should put them in treatment. And we should put them in treatment where if for example, they test positive for drugs, they spend a night in jail immediately. The day they test positive, they spend at least a night in jail to provide strong negative reinforcement in terms of immediate strong negative reinforcement for abusing substances when you've already been placed in treatment, already been given a second chance.
What's interesting is that deterrence for that individual who's selling drugs in order to support their own habit, that deterrence could save their life and other people's lives.
Right. So
people talk about criminal justice reform. You know, we put too many people in jail, and this would be another measure of putting more people in jail. But does that mean giving a pass for all drug dealing? Is that the kind of state we want to live in?
I think, there are certain monikers that are attached to movements that cause a disservice. So in my view, there's plenty of room for criminal justice reform. It doesn't simply mean letting everyone out of prison. It doesn't simply mean not punishing people for crimes that they commit. It doesn't mean turning a blind eye to, for example, misdemeanors. What it means is that, in my view, is that we intervene at the first opportunity. We intervene in a way that does put people on the straight and narrow. So, for example, if you have a fentanyl problem, or you have any kind of a substance abuse problem, that manifests other criminal behavior. It may manifest shoplifting. It may manifest burglary. It may manifest other kinds of illegal activity. And when someone is arrested, for example, let's just use shoplifting as an example. If you simply turn a blind eye, if you simply say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and excuse this behavior, you're going to get more of that behavior, and you're going to get increasingly aggravated behavior, criminal behavior. My view, criminal justice reform would mean that you immediately take that individual, and if that individual is willing, you put them in a what we call collaborative courts or something like, where they're closely monitored, both their drug use as well as any criminal behavior, and you quickly and immediately sanction any return to that behavior, so that we don't have increasingly aggravated criminal behavior. That's what I think it means. It doesn't mean simply not punishing people, in my view.
And I don't think people don't understand that when you do that, you save that person's life. I've talked to so many people, and on this podcast, we've had people who've had, you know, very difficult past, long times in jail, and that saved their lives, because otherwise they would have died. So that it's an opportunity. When I see patients in the emergency department who are, you know, getting jail clearance, I tell them this is an opportunity for you to reset and take advantage of the treatment that's available.
That is exactly right. And I think that those who believe that somehow simply not sanctioning criminal behavior provides a benefit to society. I think that's just simply wrong.
I think there's also a hypocrisy. See if you agree. You know, there's a lot of discussion on gun violence. And I think, you know, Governor Newsom even said, you know, we need to, you know, change constitutional amendments and get rid of guns. People want to get rid of guns in order to prevent gun violence. Why don't we want to get rid of fentanyl in order to prevent fentanyl overdoses and deaths?
Well, Dr. Lev, you're asking the wrong person.
is this a partisan divide?
There are clearly more Democrats that believe that we, for example, shouldn't necessarily punish folks who distribute fentanyl. There are some Democrats that believe that. But the majority, this is a SB 44, Alexander's Law, is a bipartisan measure. It has actually more Democrats in support than Republicans. So it is not and should not be a partisan measure. You know, there are folks on extremes on both sides, on both the Republican and the Democratic side, that really don't add value to the solution. There are some people that simply don't believe we should, for example, I mentioned, you know, what we call collaborative courts. There are some people that think we shouldn't divert anybody. You simply, you know, first instance, you incarcerate them for some lengthy period of time, and that teaches them a lesson. That's not quite, I don't agree with that. I also don't agree with some who believe we just turned a blind eye. We don't sanction criminal behavior. It's certainly not what some would call lower level criminal behavior. I don't agree with that either.
Interesting. So tell us what happened with Alexander's Law or bill.
Alexander's Law was introduced first day of session, which began in December of 2022, and it was heard in Public Safety Committee in the Senate, and was defeated there on two occasions. That's not the end of it, though. I'm not done. And as you mentioned at the outset, there's a proposed initiative to be placed on the ballot in 2024. I am going to work very hard to make sure that we do something of significance in terms of making sure that, for example, repeat drug offenders are prevented from continuing to sell drugs in 2023. It's our job. I mean, that's it will be a sad commentary if this has to show up on the ballot for the voters to make that decision.
So it was defeated, SB 44, Alexander Law was defeated, but you're going to bring it back?
I'm going to bring, it may not be called SB 44, but it will be some form of that, yes. We're working right now, I'm working with a group to create a, as I mentioned at the outset, to create a plan that encompasses all the areas of addressing this issue, the prevention, education, treatment, as well as law enforcement. And I am confident we will have something to put before the legislature here in the next probably 6 weeks, and that something will pass before we adjourn in September so that we have a comprehensive approach here soon.
I love your, you know, determination and not giving up, full speed ahead. So,
well, Matt hasn't given up. I know Matt hasn't given up, and I know the parents. I am so moved. I am so inspired by Matt's wife and the other parents who have taken this horrible tragedy, this grief beyond grief, and taken that and channeled it into doing something that's going to benefit others.
Yeah, I am too. They're the reason I do what I do. They definitely inspire all of us to continue, and we have to do that. Otherwise, I think people who are against this are for fentanyl deaths. You can't want a solution to people dying from fentanyl without having deterrence for that. To one other way is going upstream, like, you know, when the classic things we talk about at ONDCP is supply and demand, but also upstream solutions versus downstream solutions. So upstream for fentanyl is what you're working on, but going even higher, and I don't think, you know, as a California legislature, maybe you can, but is declaring fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. So I had an interesting conversation and podcast, maybe, I don't remember if it was your time. Andrew Weber was Assistant Secretary of Defense for Nuclear, Chemical, and Biological Defense. He was under Obama. But he definitely supports declaring fentanyl as a weapon of mass destruction, as upstream supply of stopping the cartels at the manufacturing level. I don't know, you know, as a state representative, if that's something that you would support. But we are trying to get more attorney general.
I'm not studied that aspect, but I was in a previous life, previous career, very much involved in dealing with the entities, foreign and domestic, but in my case, primarily foreign, that were either transporting or producing illegal drugs. Fentanyl is different because it is a lot less intensive to make, and it's a lot less expensive to buy, and a lot smaller, so that you could move, you know, literally millions of doses of fentanyl in one vehicle across the border. So it's a bigger challenge, but I do think the state has a role in that we have combined intelligence resources, whether it's law enforcement intelligence resources, or even the National Guard has intelligence resources, combined with federal intelligence resources to address the source of production of fentanyl. Right now, the source of production is largely in Mexico, and we're having some challenges coordinating with the Mexican government over this issue. They at the highest levels, they somewhat deny that most of the fentanyl that comes in the United States comes in from Mexico, and it's become quite sophisticated and quite difficult to catch. And the way to do that is through intel, is through identifying, you know, the delivery routes. It's through identifying, sort of working, as you say, your way upstream to get to the manufacturing location, and then since it's in Mexico, and then using every tool that we have in our toolbox to pressure the Mexican government into addressing it.
Right. I want to ask you about marijuana. And I know that's not you're focused on fentanyl, but the reason I bring up marijuana is when I talk to patients in the emergency department who use fentanyl or overdosed by accident, whether they're meant to or not, almost all of them, almost 100%, started their journey to drugs with marijuana, and often at a very young age. And there's a couple bills we put out. One was last year, which failed, was putting warning labels on marijuana products. I was very disappointed that did not pass. It was just following the science of what we did with alcohol and tobacco and applying it to marijuana. And the legislature on the Senate side, and I think the governor himself was against warning labels. I mean, we have warning when we watch a movie with, you know, flashing lights, but somehow the industry did not want it, was able to defeat it for marijuana products. So we came back again this year and applied it to at least candies, you know, at our local children's hospital.
Dr. Lev, who, you know, I didn't see that bill last year. It must not have made it to either committee I chair or to the floor. Who's
it, carrying it passed it last year? It was Senator, I don't want to say the wrong thing, but it passed Senate and it died in Assembly. So now we have a couple bills. AB 1207 is the Cannabis Candy Child Safety Act. This one, I think, has momentum because people care about babies, and we are showing them the growing number of kids under the age of five, babies, who are coming to the emergency department with marijuana poisoning. They're getting it from gummies and their mom's gummies. We've done studies to see where kids are getting poisoned.
Do you know who's carrying the bill?
Dixon. No. Irwin. Irwin is that one.
Oh, Jackie Irwin. Okay, good. All right. I will definitely look for that.
Yeah. So that one, I think, will have the bipartisan support to protect children. And the other one is AB 1619. It's become a two-year bill. It's about, since we couldn't put labels on the marijuana products and that was killed, one of the other things we see is people coming to the emergency department with Medicaid interactions because of their marijuana and their prescription drugs. So we thought it'd be less controversial to have pharmacies put labels on your medication. So when you pick up your blood thinner, it'll say, don't use with cannabis products. Just like when you pick up a prescription, it says, don't use with alcohol or grapefruit juice. So we studied this with pharmacies and we sent out 10,000 info cards and asked people to answer whether this is information they would want. And overwhelmingly, people want this information. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and I'll have to follow that as well. Do you know that bill number and that author?
Yeah, that one is AB 1619 Dixon.
Dixon, okay.
All right, yeah. Thank
you. And afterwards, I could send that information to you.
You can send it to Jackie. Yeah, she represents an area in Orange County, which is we don't overlap, but majority of my district's in Orange County.
Yeah. So you're retired military. Thank you for your service. I have two daughters who are serving now.
Oh, really? Where?
They're in the Navy.
Okay. That's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you. I am a proud Navy mom. But people say, oh, we need to protect our veterans and people suffer from PTSD. And that's why we want to let them use marijuana and the magic mushrooms and psychedelics in order to help PTSD. As a physician, I vehemently disagree. And also as a Navy mom, feel like we need to protect our veterans, not use them as guinea pigs. But I don't know if you have.
Both my wife and my daughter are also veterans. My wife, from my perspective, at least sadly outranked me our entire career. maybe not so much from her perspective. The bill you raised concerning the legalization, in essence, or the decriminalization of psilocybin and mushrooms, I did not support. I voted against the bill. I think that the legislature shouldn't be making medical decisions. I think we should leave that to experts.
Oh my gosh, amen to you.
I'm completely supportive of study, and if NIH or what other and any other reputable organization institution wishes to study the impacts, both beneficial and non-beneficial impacts of, for example, psilocybin, I'm supportive. But we are not in a position, I'm certainly not in a position to make a determination as to what's medicine and what's not medicine. And I do, as a veteran, I do find it, offensive that somehow that it's being proposed and being purported as something that is of great benefit to veterans. And that somehow creates the image that all or most veterans, need some sort of psychogenic medication, drug. And I don't necessarily agree with that, number one. But number two, if that is true, then we ought to study it. And we ought to study it in a way that is based on science and figure out, okay, if this is beneficial, then let's figure out what benefits exist and how to best administer it, rather than basically allowing it to be sold on the street.
Yeah, our veterans deserve the best. They don't deserve to be experimented on.
Nor used as sort of props in this
exploited,
effort.
Exploited, right.
great. So you're a California man. Our state is having some difficulties, right, with homelessness and some people leaving. You're a grandfather. What do you say to, you know, your grandchildren and their advice and their hope for making California great?
So that's an excellent question, because we have seven grandchildren. Six of them have been born in the last 2 years. So I haven't spent much time talking to those two and under about California's future. But we have a 13-year-old granddaughter. We have three grandkids that live in San Francisco. San Francisco is sort of the epicenter of what's happening in some places in California. And I want San Francisco to thrive. I want all of California to thrive. What do I say? I say that California has had and still does have great potential. And it's our job to make sure that we reach our potential. We have problems. We have homeless problems. By the way, there's a nexus between homelessness, substance abuse, and mental illness.
The trifecta.
I'm sorry?
We call it the trifecta.
The trifecta. Well, absolutely. And so people like me, I proposed something called Care Court. I didn't propose it. The governor proposed it. I carried something called Care Court, which is designed to be a more aggressive way of treating those with schizophrenia. A great number of those who are on the street have schizophrenia. And same thing with, you know, I worry about our business climate in California. I worry about our housing situation in California, that we are not doing enough to create housing so that people can afford to live here. Having three children in their 30s that are challenged with housing issues, that's a big deal. So what do I tell them? I tell them that they have responsibility, those that are adults, they have responsibility to help address those issues. They have a responsibility to participate. They have a responsibility of their voices heard. They have a responsibility. My daughter and son-in-law in San Francisco have gotten very active in their community, very active in terms of criminal justice and what they think is lacking in San Francisco in criminal justice issues, along the lines of what we talked about earlier about enforcement. So that's what I tell them, is that, you know, don't just watch, you got to get engaged.
That's great. And so you were advising President Clinton at ONDCP with the Drug Czar. And what would be your advice now to Dr. Rahul Gupta, current Drug Czar, who advises President Biden? What would be your advice to Dr. Gupta?
You got to raise visibility. That when I was in Washington, the Drug Czar, so to speak, was in the cabinet. I think that raising the visibility of the fentanyl issue and other abuse issues is critical. That's the advice I would give him at the outset. And then the same things we talked about before is that we don't want to get trapped in this either or scenario. We got to raise visibility, not get trapped in this either or scenario where we're given a false choice between enforcement and prevention, and be we resource it and become more aggressive.
Good advice. And finally, your advice as a father and a grandfather to parents that I know that you speak to.
So my advice to parents and grandparents is to be engaged on social media. You know, right now, young people, when I talk about young people who, you know, teenagers who can engage in on social media, they're subjected to challenges that I never faced, and, you know, anybody over 50 never faced when they were young people, that encourages harmful behavior in some instances, or at least gives you access to information that encourages harmful behavior, that to the points made earlier about drug use, is that even marijuana use is not something that should be taken lightly, that in terms of fentanyl, that the expression one pill can kill is certainly apt, that there are a lot of young people, 20,000 young people in California have died thinking that, you know, somehow that whether it was oxycodone or Percocet or Xanax, that one pill wasn't going to be harmful. And sadly, as in Alexandra's case, killed them.
Right. Great advice. You know, speaking of marijuana, because we mentioned that a few times, and the trifecta, there's one study that shows if we could decrease 30% of schizophrenia cases in men age 18 to 30, but if they didn't use marijuana.
I've not seen that, but I believe it. I haven't seen it, but I believe it.
Yeah, there's and sadly people realize that, but marijuana is a risk factor to schizophrenia. Not everybody who uses marijuana is going to get schizophrenia, just like not everybody who smokes cigarettes is going to get lung disease, but it's a risk factor.
Same thing with methamphetamine, even more so with methamphetamine. Methamphetamine-induced schizophrenia is becoming more and more prevalent, as you probably know.
Right, but as far as long-term and permanence, marijuana has more of that than meth.
Is that right? No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
I learn something new every day. Thank you, Dr. Levin.
Yeah. I want to thank you to Matt. Matt, thank you for not giving up and for being brave and speaking out. You represent the many parents who also have suffered tragically, unfathomable loss of losing a child to something that shouldn't happen. And so I know that Alexandra's memory is a blessing to you and many others murdered by fentanyl. And thank you, Senator Umberg, for your leadership, also not giving up. And now more than ever, our future and the future of our country depends on upstream supply and demand reduction of drugs. And I really thank you for your service.
Well, Dr. Lev, thank you. Thank you for highlighting these issues. And I echo your comments concerning those parents who are using this tragedy to benefit others.
Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answer your questions. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support from our sponsor. A sincere and warm thank you to FAF, Families Against Fentanyl. Visit familiesagainstfentanyl.org and sign the petition to declare illegal fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. Make drug dealers think twice and three times before peddling killer drugs. Our producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I am your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more high truths.